Okay, roll call. City and County of San Francisco, Chair Carroll cannot attend, so we're going to go to the County of Alameda.
Present.
Then City and County of San Francisco.
Present.
City of Oakland.
Present.
City of San Jose.
Present.
County of Santa Clara.
Present.
County of Contra Costa, they're not in attendance. County of Marin.
Present.
And County of Monterey.
Present.
County of San Mateo.
Present.
And County of Sonoma.
Present.
Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you.
The next item is the approval of the minutes.
Thank you. Are there any comments or questions, discussion about the minutes from the last meeting? Are there comments? Oh, I'm sorry.
Just notice that Chris Gottlieb's name is misspelled frequently in the notes.
Okay, thank you. We'll correct that. Definitely.
Any public comments?
Public comment? I need you guys to tell me that is looking through.
Now it's green.
Hello?
That's better.
Okay, hi. Blair Beekman. I'm everyday person of the public. I'm kind of regular at these meetings. Not very deep in knowledge, but yet I'm a regular. So thank you, as always, for your time and patience. I tend to try to speak on pretty much all agenda items. Thank you for your patience with that. I just wanted to comment that my usual public comment at this meeting minutes time is for me the importance of meeting minutes have a bit better description what public comment actually says and what comments are said by approval authority persons as well. In the past from Monterey, the previous person from Monterey made a really important point how to add certain clarification ways to view the meeting minutes for approval authority persons to understand what was said. It was a very good, important start. I just think we have to work on the concepts of adding a few more words or a few more sentences. It's not very much, but just a bit more to offer what is actually being said at the by the public during the process is important. That is lacking at this point. It's my continual point that I make at this time, and I'll talk about it again when we talk about internet items on item 6 today. Otherwise, good luck to Open Democracy. I think it's a really awesome idea, and thanks for the meeting today. Good luck on our work.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments? Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Thank you. All in favor?
Second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
Thank you, Chair. Next item is the General Manager's Report. There are a number of items on there that I'll walk you through. If there's an action item that we can take later. The first item is an update with our grants. The WASI, as you know, we manage 4 grants, not just the WASI grants. So the WASI grant application was submitted to funding agencies. We also are going to have already submitted applications for the TDTP grants targeting violence and protection against terrorism. It's a competitive grant. We're seeking $1 million for that grant. There's a continuing grant of our Securing the City's grant, and we have been appropriated $950,000 for for that grant. And then the other grant is a regional catastrophic preparedness grant. That is a competitive grant we've been awarded previously. We're going to seek the maximum award of $3 million. Chris Luck will be coming to you and Corinne seeking letters of support. We do need letters of support from the region, and they will be seeking that so that we have a solid application, because it is a competitive grant, and we hope also to be awarded that grant. The other item that I'll be coming to you is our letter to the Department of Homeland Security. You know, you might not be aware, but we are 12 counties. We have 14 jurisdictions in our NYC footprint for all the grants. And we also, you know, are part of the AOR, the NIC, right, for Northern California Intelligence Agency. Unfortunately, FEMA doesn't recognize all five of our footprint counties. They don't recognize Sonoma, they don't recognize Solano, they don't recognize Napa, and neither do they recognize Monterey as well as Santa Cruz. So we're going to, by letter, request that these counties, they've always been a part of our footprint, be recognized in our footprint, only because when the risk and they look at threat, consequence, and vulnerability determine our risk, and that is associated to grant funding. Last year, our grant funds, as you remember, went down $500,000, and the year before again, it went down another $500,000. And a lot of it is a lot of the risk. You know, there's a lot of risk in assets down in Monterey, you know, ag country and naval post grad. That should be in our MSA, and that should be part of our risk score, as well as some of the items in Solano County, you know, high assets, critical infrastructure, as well as ag areas of Sonoma and Napa. We just had Bottle Rock up in Napa. That is an open, you know, event that should be recognized as well. So we're going to request that, and I'm going to need, in order to request, applicate in that letter, support from each and every county. So I'll be working on that after the meeting, and the idea would be submitting that letter sometime in July. The other item is our annual report. This annual report, you know, I'm proud to say it is one of our better annual reports, because it lays out our four various different types of grant streams, and it highlights some of our achievements that we accomplished last year, including our summit, preparedness summit, that we had over 400 applicants or attendees coming. Some of our projects in the RCPGP area on equitable community preparedness, our cyber navigation project, as well as the programs under targeted violence and terrorism prevention, working with the schools, the school counselors, and so forth. We're one of the very few UWASIs that handle four different types of grant streams on an annual basis, and we do it really well. We leverage a lot of the capabilities from one grant. Targeting the Securing the Cities grant is really left a boom. It's all preparedness and dealing with training and exercise on the left of boom, but we also complement that with the national priority areas on right of boom for response and exercises. So this is our annual report. And then the other items are mandated under our UWASI MOU and our bylaws that they need approval from the approval authority. And the items are the organization chart, our annual work plans, and our management team budget. I'll draw your attention to the attachment that has our annual, our
organization chart for the OWASI. We broke it down into functionality. We have it under listed the functionality, but also coordinated to the grant source. Each of our members are funded from different types of grant funding sources. Not everyone is under the OWASI grant. Some folks are sourced under the Community Cities grant. Others are under the other two grants as well. We have a number of new management team members. And so I thought it would be good if we can maybe take a moment to go around and introduce ourselves so that you can associate a face with a name. So why don't we start with Leo?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Leo Samuelson. I'm a senior management assistant with the UWASI and the general administrative justice.
Vivina?
I'm Vivina Santos, a senior management assistant in the admin team.
I'm Molly Eisenfields. I'm the regional grants manager, often referred to as the new Mary.
Meredith?
I'm Meredith Terrell. I'm the community preparedness analyst, and I'm working with Christoph on the RCPGP grant, as well as the UWASI National Priority Program of Community Preparedness and Resilience. So, all things community, I'm related.
I'm Jocelyn Jolman, and I'm the ASAP administrative analyst, but I suspect I'll probably be melding into a bunch of other stuff too.
Good morning, I'm Harold, the RCPGP.
Morning, I'm Matt Wyatt. I was previously the ATEC training exercise project manager, but I have now gone over to the SEC side, and I am the CBER project manager with Dave Rocha.
And I'm Dave Rocha. I'm the Security and Cities program manager, and previously spent 33 years here in Allen County.
Hi, I'm Oscar. I'm the training and exercise program head at the best of you all.
Hi, I'm Natalie Ju. I'm the grant accountant.
Hello, I'm Captain Wanda with the San Francisco Police Department. I help coordinate the beta training for law enforcement here, facilitate training for the BRDs and BRDs for SDC and any other program in the private sector. Also help Jody with the TVTP network, and I also help procure training for the department.
Thank you, management team. And then moving forward, you know, associating in alliance with our organization chart are the work plans for each and every management team member. And it's broken down into the UWASI goals, the assignments, responsibilities, the critical task functions of the job, and the allocation of time. And they're all attached for your review. And this is really important because if there's any types of audit from any of the grants, we have documentation of functional timesheets. We have documentation that aligns to our organization chart and the amount of time that each and everyone spends in these areas. So everything is lined up. And then the other item is our management team budget, and that is attached here. Our revenue sources, as I had previously mentioned, comes from the four different types of grants. The UWASI grant, fiscal year 21 through 23, the RCPGP grant, fiscal year 21 and 22, and the Securing the Cities grant, fiscal year 22 and 23. And then the TVTP grant. So the amount for the fiscal year 23-24 is $5.7 million roughly. Our expenditures or operating expenditures under the expenditures are exactly the same as last year. We haven't changed the operating expenditures. The personnel has gone up a little bit, 5% roughly, and that is due to cost of living allowances, COLAs, and that is standard within the city and county of San Francisco. And then the last item is our management tracking tool. For the upcoming year, we're proposing not to have a January meeting and only have 4 meetings a year, only because the NOFO doesn't really come out for the UWASI until the latter portion of February. And the other two important items were the election of officers, and that can be moved to November. And then our annual reports of the NICRIT, as well as our training exercise, it gives them more time to complete everything in January so they could present in March. So it kind of lines out. So it's always in January, light meeting. So rather than having an additional meeting, we can have 4 per next year in the year 2024. And then that, with that, lines with our tracking tool. Our next meeting will be in September, and we will have an update regarding the grant applications. Of course, the GM report. We will discuss the management team update, and then there will be an item regarding risk management update, and then the program quarterly updates of the various different grants, Security Cities, the TBTP grant, the BATEP program, and the RCPGP grant. And then we'll have an update from our NICRIC folks, and then the financial reports. And that will be in September the 14th will be our next meeting. So going back to the action item, is to approve the organization chart, the annual work plans, and the management team budget.
So do we have any comments or discussion from the approval authority?
No, I particularly support the restructuring of the meetings because I think it'll be more productive, so thank you.
Likewise, I concur with the restructuring means will be much more effective.
Thank you.
And any public comments?
Hi, Blair Beekman. Thanks a lot for this item and for comment on this item. It's my feeling that there's real questions about how democracy practices itself, and so I worry that you'll be limiting one meeting, you'll be taking out one, but I'm understanding its purpose while you're doing it, and it's quarterly, can be quarterly meeting process can be understandable. It's my hope in that quarterly meeting process that you really want to take the time to be really open and take the extra step of what can be a good public meeting process. Because believe it or not, here at Bay UWASI, you have a really unique, good system. And so often is the case when you have something really good going, you often don't know it. I'm living in San Diego now, and their UWASI is not very open and transparent with the public. They don't have a public meeting process like this. I think we should really respect the public meeting process and how to really always want to develop it, always look for ways to develop good practices for meeting. You talk about UWASI has a commitment to the school system right now in their programs that I think can come right back to how do we do those good practices within the school system, how do we bring that here in our meeting place? That's what's so interesting about this Bay UWASI that makes it unique among UWASIs that I hope you really want to continue to want to work on. You used to be able to offer projects that you talk about and vet in January. You then place them on your June agenda items at this time to describe what projects were decided upon by each county. You don't do that anymore. We really have to question that we're not here to practice the concepts of war and secrecy and its opacity. We're here as an agency to develop the concepts of open democracy. And when we do that, that promotes the ideas of peace. It promotes well-being, standard of living, what's the word? Something like that, that's a shared word right now. We practice our better selves when we practice open democracy and not war. So it's really important that we want to practice these things. That's why we are here, is to promote a better selves. And I just hope we want to do that. So thank you for your time.
All right. So do we have a motion to approve the action items? Anyone?
Motion to approve.
And second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Before we go on, I wanted to mention, I think we missed Corinne on the introductions.
Oh,
a very important person there.
How can we miss her?
I'm Corinne Bradshire with the UOC management team. I am the director of the program and the grant.
So let me continue the title.
Yes. Yes. She's not the only.
And a goodie.
And a goodie.
The same. My name is Janelle Meyer. I'm a regional program manager for the Bay Area, UWASI, and it's nice to see new folks. I've known you before and welcome to the OBS.
Thank you. That's
awesome. All right. So we'll move on to the next item, number four, and Janelle.
Good morning, approval of early members. I am going to you to talk about item four, and this is it's an overview of the Bay Area UWASI work group annual plans. It's a companion piece to Craig's staff work plans in the org chart that you just approved. From the program side, we work directly with your staff through our work groups, and this essentially provides you with the work group annual plans that the work groups agree on and provide input to at the beginning of the year. We update them in June to show you what's been going on, and then you see what the rest of the year looks like. You'll see items, it's the work groups A through G, and within each work group plan, the goal area is noted that is aligned with our Bay Area goals, and the meeting cycle is noted, as well as projects and activities that each work group participates in and provides input to the general manager throughout the year, and our program staff is our chairs to these work group meetings. So, just wanted to make sure that you have an opportunity to see all of that and refer to them as you might ideally send your staff out to attend. Most of our work group meetings are all over Teams now, so easy to access.
All right, thank you. Any comments or discussion? This item? Public comment?
Actually, I did have one comment. I greatly appreciate the ease of access. Would it be possible to record the meetings so that folks that are unable to attend have the ability to watch it later?
So I would ask some of the work group chairs. I think you record them often anyway, right? Do we post them as a recording?
We have not made work group meetings publicly available. They're not open to the public conversation, but we do have the capability to record them, and we often do record them for our own note-taking reference purposes, so we can certainly share with work group members who did not attend a recording if we were technically competent to have the recording be successful, which is something we're trying to make sure we have access to.
Thank you.
The follow-up on that, or the post notes available to
yes.
for us to request or distribute
yes.
to the members?
Our protocol with the work group chairs is that within a week, we send a summary email to the work group members, everyone, whether they attended or not, receives a summary email with the PowerPoint slides and any action items for work group members. So an email that's brought to the work group distribution list following the meeting with the links and slides and references that were covered.
And we should have those archived for past meetings if you are interested in hearing something from before.
Anything else? No. We'll go on to public comments. No comment? Okay. So we'll move on to item number 5, National Priority Projects Update. Janelle again.
Yes, this is my item as well. Thank you, Chair Hotelling. So this is a National Priority Project Progress Update. This is for discussion only. So essentially, the item in front of you summarizes on the first page our Homeland Security required requirements regarding national priority areas. Essentially, in FY20, the Homeland Security began to require a certain percentage of our allocation be devoted to national priority areas that were named nationally. That has continued from FY20 through FY23. So there's 4 years of national priority areas and then the projects within that. I wanted to give you a real overarching summary of what the status is in these projects. But the projects all are required to have a regional approach. They all need to be cost effective. They all must align with our Bay Area Thyra spur. And then as we submit them with our applications to FEMA, FEMA puts them through an evaluation effectiveness review, an EER. So that's the process they go through. We draft and develop these projects using FEMA technical assistance, our Bay Area subject matter expertise, as well as ensuring to take the information to our work groups that you just heard about and getting stakeholder input from that perspective. So that's the overview of what the national priority projects essentially are and how they came to be. In tables 1 through 4, I provide a summary at the top of the percentage per each national priority area that we were required to fund. And then underneath that is a table with the project titles and the allocation that was approved. And I wanted to just briefly review each one or each table. I'll give you the project lead names that all of our program staff, there's a person that is leading the projects in case you have questions afterwards. So in FY20, the national priority projects, you can see there were 4 of them. This was the first year, and 20% of an investment was required from us. And you can see the breakdown per allocation required at the top. There were 4 priority areas, the enhancing intelligence and information sharing. That's a first watch pilot project. Dave Rusha is the lead there. Then in enhancing protections of soft targets and crowded places, this had to have an election security focus, at least part of that allocation. So Amy Ramirez led the access and functional needs planning during elections. There's a plan that's actually posted on our website now that provides an overview and analysis and some strategic recommendations for 2024. And also the equipment for election security mobile barrier trailer kits. And Dave manages that project. Addressing emergent threats is a hazmat decontamination equipment project, and Dave manages that. And then McYoung manages the enhancing cybersecurity project, which is cyber navigator training, cyber navigator for analysis and equipment, and then also training for election security. So these projects are all up to 90% complete. So that's essentially how the tables are laid out. You can see in FY21, the projects, I don't need to read them to you, but I just wanna make sure that you know the project leads to talk to. In FY21, it was added, domestic violent extremism was added, and our fusion center began to receive the election or the enhancing intelligence and information sharing amount. So that's Mike Senna, and then Amy Ramirez manages that MOU. And then you can see going down the list, Dave and Matt manage the protecting protections of soft targets, crowded places, emergent threats, and then Nick Young again for cybersecurity, and Jody began managing our DVE, domestic violent extremism. These projects are all up to 50% complete, and again in FY21, 30% of our allocation was required. FY22 is, you can see that one other was added, election security, but FEMA began to say, all right, we'll just require 12% of your 30% allocation to be required to be allocated to certain areas. The rest of it is flexible. So you can see the dollar amounts devoted to the various national priority areas. Some of these things are things that we already know are a success, and we're expanding them into the region. So you can see some of the projects there. And then lastly, FY23 are projects that you just saw last month and approved to move on to FEMA. Again, 30% investment requirement. These are all in the enhanced effectiveness review process. We're waiting to hear approval from FEMA to begin working on them. So all 3 years, except for FY23, are in some level of project conduct. And you will start seeing and have started to see the FY20 projects coming to you in your jurisdictions.
All right. Are there any questions or comments? No. Any public comments?
Hi, Blair Beekman. These national items, it's a new process that started, national asks. I think just a reminder or just a thought that, you know, dealing with domestic violence, extremism, and cybersecurity issues has been a new concept for Bay UASI since the election of 2020. So just a thank you. You guys, I know, have been really overwhelmed and had to create a lot of balance in your questions, how to address these issues. So, you know, in ways, we have been at war again. And it's sad when that happens, and with both the cybersecurity and the DVE issues. It's so important to learn that balance that we don't have to be at war, and learning how to not be at war, just a real good luck to yourselves. And I really think it's a continued effort towards the practices of open democracy that it works how to limit those things, and it brings out our decency, our better selves, and those are the ways towards sustainability, I feel, that can really answer and help, you know, these people who are having real problems and questions about our democracy at this time. And if we offer our good selves, that gives them the hope in working out these DVE issues. Thank you.
Chair, one thing I did neglect to mention, something important in the FY22 national priority areas, the enhancing community preparedness and resilience was added as a national priority area. And I know this table and group was very interested in that, and Meredith and
Corinne
managed this.
All right. Thanks, Danielle, for your report. Moving on to item number six, fiscal year 24-25 project proposal guidance. Molly?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Molly Keeson-Fields, and I am here today to present the project proposal guidance document, which is a pretty thick document in your materials. I'm not going to walk you through the document itself today, but you should know that everything is in there that a subrecipient would need to know about applying this year, or potential subrecipients. including details about our review and approval process, criteria for scoring proposals, submission process, roles and responsibilities, and spending guidelines. And the last page of the general document before you get to the appendices has a really helpful timeline, so you can get a sense that of what our process looks like. But it's very similar. The good news is it's very similar to previous years. The timeline is in line with past proposal rounds. So the portal to apply opens September 15th this year. We will have a kickoff meeting to answer questions and whatnot the day before that on September 14th. And then after we receive the proposals, I think we open it for a three-week window. We will review them for compliance and fit. The approval authority members, I think it's November 8th, you'll have a three-week period to review your jurisdiction's projects. So basically the hubs will be meeting in January, and the approval authority will approve projects in March of 2024. I mentioned that it's pretty similar to the last time. The biggest difference is that from 2022 is that we now have a sixth national priority area. As Janelle just mentioned, the percentage of these projects will remain at 30%. The working groups are detailed in the document, so you can see that they're aligned with the UASI goals, the DHS goals, the state's investment justification process. And in terms of funding allocations, the core cities are getting the same amount that they received in 2023. And as many of you know, but not all of you, beginning in fiscal year 2022, we moved to a two-year funding cycle for the hub project allocations. So we are using fiscal year 23 information to project out grant years 24 and 25. So we encourage the hubs to start planning early, and we encourage the approval authority members to get involved in the vetting process if you wish. So you can help identify which projects we end up funding. The final thing I want to say is that just a quick reminder that hub voting members are limited to 1 to 3 members. You can add additional members just in an advisory capacity. So that's all I'm going to say today, but I'm happy to take questions. And I am very happy to talk with anybody individually about the proposal application process, or make sure that, you know, you understand what needs to be done. And any questions?
No, I just want to comment that going to the two-year cycle really helped administratively. And during the year, I appreciate the UASI's flexibility of where the projects are changing. And obviously, when you bid a project 2 years prior, there's always price fluctuations and adjustments that have to be made. So I do appreciate the engagement of staff to make sure we get best bang for our buck over all the projects.
Any other questions?
It's an action item.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Should have reminded you of that.
Okay, all right. So just to confirm, there's no more questions or comments at all. And do we have a public comment?
Hi, Blair Beekman. I need to go over this item a little better. I haven't been able to read it as much as I'd like. I'm assuming that interestingly, it's my feeling that Bay Uwassee, local Bay Area cities have made a real effort to work towards natural disaster preparedness practices in the past year or two. San Jose has done some really interesting good efforts, Oakland, Berkeley. They've been doing their work. And I think it's an interesting proposal and concept to consider how natural disaster preparedness can work ideas of equity and health and human services ideas before law enforcement. To work on these practices in those good terms is a really important concept at this time in our lives, I feel. And it's from that, it's my feeling Bay Uwassee has taken a bit of a detached position in working on natural disaster preparedness practices, which has been interesting to me, because to me it's been a way that it can get pretty nerve-wracking to consider we may be having an upcoming natural disaster sooner than we think. And with a disaster position from Bay Uwassee, I'm starting to feel that we maybe can have a little bit of breathing room to ask the questions. Maybe it's a few years away. Maybe we can mitigate it if there is one coming up soon. And I just kind of wanted to report that here at this time on how we're addressing the issue, and always try to be open if one's coming sooner that we can talk about it openly. And Bay Uwassee is usually great about doing that. And they haven't, I just haven't gotten that feeling that we have to be on urgency immediate red alert at this time. So I'm hopeful. And I'm thank you for your patience to hear me out on this item and how I'm trying to add to how to talk about these subjects openly and prepare openly and well. And that's good public safety and good practices. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to approve the proposal guidance?
Motion to approve.
Make the motion.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, it passes. Moving on to number 7, website improvement project update. Corinne.
Lucky number 7.
Yes.
Good morning. Do we have a clicker? You're going to click for me? Okay. We can jump right to the next one, Leo. So, good morning. If you have visited the BayAreaUwassee.org website lately, you'll visibly see that it's a bit archaic. We've talked to this board previously about the website being outdated and obsolete. It is not the most cyber secure, so we are open to that kind of vulnerability. And so it's time for an overhaul. And so what I want to present to you today is the research and the preparations that we have done for this overhaul, what we're looking to get out of it. And then we are asking for your approval on the budget for our next steps in building out the new website. So stepping back a little bit, for our new members, back in 2019, we started these conversations about an overhaul for a website, recognizing the cyber vulnerabilities and the outdatedness of just the cyber structure, architecture of the website. And our grant, our office Uwassee management team, we expanded our grant streams, right? We started getting the Securing the Cities grant, the TVTP grant, the RCPGP grant. So our function began expanding, and so now we have a need for integrating these different systems and our operations. So in 2021, between then, we did a whole request for information process to understand what kind of vendors are out there, what does it mean to update a website, so we did some research there. Then we were able to issue a request for proposals, got a contractor team on board that began a process of analyzing our need, what are our functions, what do we need to accomplish in this, you know, digital space and digital ecosystem, what are the available solutions, and we did a bunch of interviews with entities like Salesforce and Cornerstone for learning management systems, and so now we are at the stage where we have a roadmap, we have a final, what's called a business requirements document that lays out our recommendations. And we'll go through those here shortly with an estimated budget and a more clear understanding of what it takes to build this integrated systems together for us. And then our next steps will be a new request for proposals to engage a contractor team to actually design and build the integrated systems based on the business requirements document that has business requirements that have been laid out. And so then hopefully a year to year and a half from now, we all will be enjoying a more effective, efficient, centralized user space, both for staff in managing the grant and sub-grants, as well as work group members, as well as folks taking training courses through our training and exercise program. So let's go to the next one, Leo. A summary of the analysis. Four main needs that we focused on, as I mentioned, a cyber-secure, future-proof, integrated digital presence. We're talking about integrating, you know, we've since created the alertthebay.org website. Baytep.org is a separate website. So putting all of these things together in one platform with single sign-on for our stakeholders that utilize them. Having an integrated contact management system as opposed to our disparate spreadsheets of work group member lists. So when folks log into the UASI website, they know what part they are, and we can send distributions based on stakeholder level and what they're tagged for engagement. Integrated training and exercise coordination platform, something that allows us to manage the targeted violence and terrorism prevention funded trainings, the STC funded trainings, et cetera, beyond what baytep.org can do for us at this given time. And then upgrading our web grants management system. So those were our basic needs. We evaluated several different options in each of those needs. You can see just for website platform, we looked at Drupal, we looked at WordPress. And so the bolded there is our ultimate recommendation. And I'll go over those on the next slide, but we just wanted you to be able to see that we did look at several different options. We talked with City and County of San Francisco, IT and departments to understand the master contracts that San Francisco has and if there was any opportunities for leveraging those so we could really understand cost efficiencies and what we need for our operations. The third column on the right summarizes what we looked at and how we qualified the different solutions, right? We're looking not only for cost effectiveness, but also user friendly, something sustainable that we can manage with our in-house staff and be able to operate and function so it doesn't just ultimately become out of date because we don't know how to update it. Something that all of the pieces we want to be able to integrate into our centralized web platform. And then ultimately we're looking, you know, to keep our workflow efficient. So if you go to the next slide for me, Leo, the final recommendations, we had four main needs. Two of those get met with the website by integrating the contact management system into the customized website. And so there's already established platforms, components, tools that a web developer can pull all those things together and create a custom website for us. So it's not from scratch developing code, but using a scalable, flexible, future-proof, more cybersecure environment that we can bring in Alert the Bay, bring in a new learning management system for baytep.org, and integrate our web grants management. So that the website component piece is estimated a development cost of $167,000. And then a new learning management system, which would help us, as I mentioned, expand our training registrations to our broader region. The STC geographical area is a little bit different than the Bay Area UASI region, and our website is hard-coded for registrations within the UASI region by zip code. So we need to do something there, create easier access for our training instructors to be able to communicate with participants in the courses rather than having to go through manual email lists. So there's a lot of improvements that we can make in the learning management system. And this Open edX learning management system is a open source, widely used platform that we can have a developer customize build for us, and then a fairly low annual maintenance cost that we'll be able to manage in-house. And then upgrading our web grant system, we're in conversations with Dulles Technologies, who we have a current contract with for the web grant system. They have a new, upgraded, more cyber secure, more features version of the software that we haven't upgraded to yet. And so it is free to upgrade. You know, we keep our same annual maintenance cost with Dulles Web Grants, and our understanding at this point in time is that upgrading to their new platform will give us all of the things that we have asked for in our business requirements document. So we're going to begin those conversations. So the final slide, Leo, shows our proposed budget. You know, we're asking for your approval to have a budget of up to $219,000 for developing, implementing, creating this integrated solution that has the website, the contact management system, learning management system, and managing the upgrade of the Dulles Web Grants. So it all works. Train our staff, get all of our contacts and resource library and everything plugged into it. We expect there will be some cost efficiencies by having one team do all of these. The cost estimates were based on single projects. So that we're expecting as the cap cost, but we would put out an RFP, see what costs come back, and go through that procurement process. And so that's my spiel. Do you have any questions?
Yes. We were talking a little bit ago about how there's no private side to the website. Will there be a private side to the website so we can access meeting notes, documentation?
Yes. And you know, we reference single sign-on in there, but the way that we're envisioning this is that all of our stakeholders, users, get tagged, right? You're in the emergency management work group, you're securing the city's principal partner, and so based on the tags, the permissions to view different components of the website are there. So if Ray Reardon, you're securing the city's principal partner and your emergency management work group, you'd have access to all of those things, right? But maybe Kelsey Scanlon only gets access to sign up for training courses and not see securing the city's pieces, right? So, but yeah, that's the idea, is that when content goes on the website, it has those same tags. It's available to view by these people, and then the people have the tags to view these. So it's one-stop shop for you all and for our stakeholders to access everything that's managed by UWASI, from the Securing the Cities to the training and exercise opportunities to the workgroup materials. It'll be easier for us to put the workgroup materials in one place.
And then I know from experience of other associations and programs and websites, will there be a document library system contained there, easy search and find?
Searchable, yes, document resources, yes. So I've started organizing, building that out in a Dropbox folder. You guys have heard it in the workgroup meetings. UWASI Resource Library is what I named the Dropbox folder. So since 2019, our key products are all in that folder. So that should be able to be migrated into, and we'll pull the other old stuff too and organize it. But yes, so there will be an organized and searchable document library resources.
And then I think I did hear you say that there'll be a new process then for the grants portal kind of connection with this as well.
We're looking at there's several pieces on the back end of managing the web grants in terms of us being able to view the status reports, for example, quarterly, and see who's submitted their status report and what it's kind of clunky where it is, and it's difficult to get customized reports and managing it. So we actually have a call with them tomorrow, Dulles Technologies, to understand more about the upgraded, their new platform. But my understanding, and Chris Nahair can add in, is that they have these features for customized reporting and to make everything a little bit easier. And so then due to our additional grant streams, we may then look at expanding our use of the web grants software so that we can see on a dashboard the different RCPGP funded projects, for example, and where the TVTP funding is going. That I understand may have some added cost, so we're still exploring how we may expand our use of web grants beyond just the sub-granted projects. But regardless, the existing system is not cyber secure and not being supported anymore. So we have no choice but to upgrade. Now it's a matter of how, let's upgrade so that we get the benefits out of it.
And there's no truth to the rumor that there'll be a report card on who's reporting on the grants spending earlier?
I mean, for you, Ray, we can issue a report card.
That's all.
Another question, is there still going to be maintained a public document access?
Yes. Yeah, much of our toolkits and the information in the documents resource library, right, those are for public. We want other jurisdictions, folks across the nation, to be able to benefit from the taxpayer-funded tools and resources that are developed.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just real quick, you guys are moving potentially to a hosted software. Is this currently server-based, where this would be an enhancement by moving to an AWS-type environment?
Ooh, how about I defer to Chris Nahara for that one? This is Chris Nahara, our contractor who developed the business requirements document.
Hello. So the idea on the back end is to have it hosted in AWS Gov, which is potentially the most secure at this point for what we call platform as a service. So you have Azure and other ones that you can use, but the context right now would be AWS Gov.
And, but essentially, this is an enhancement on the current structure, potentially server-based, so allows for some redundancies and things like that on the system? It allows for some redundancy on the system.
Oh, yeah. So you're referring to like reliability, the web time, uptime, that sort of thing? Yeah. So within AWS's architecture, they have what they call like zones. And so they basically, well, the site goes down, they can set up another zone, and it's there. It's secure.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any additional comments or discussion at all? Public comments?
Hi, Blair Beekman. I guess the first, sorry, I may be off on the previous, my previous public comment that it was a lot I tried to offer, and I may not be very fully accurate, and I'm sorry where I may be wrong, and just thank you again for your patience in me trying to work out how to speak of such things openly. For this item, this goes back to a thank you that you. This is mostly internal work that you actually talked about. It's public accessibility also. Thank you for that. The master meeting agenda for the Bayuasi meetings, they're on the website now, but when I try to get to them, I'm not allowed to go there. It's saying page not found, and that's been for quite a few months now. So there's an issue going on, and I think it's part of a deeper issue that because we have so much DVE going on issues, that I feel that you've created kind of a wall around yourselves. You want to practice more secrecy and opacity as somehow protecting yourselves. And I don't think that's a real good way to be working. I think we have to learn how to be open and show people exactly what we're doing. And when we do, we show them we're doing a really important thing and a good thing. And I would hate to think that you guys are hiding things out of feeling you're protecting yourselves. It's overprotection. You don't have to work that way. I can't stress that enough, that you always have to be looking how to create an openness to the process and not how to close it down. And that is after the events of 9/11, that I think we can all understand is just a really incredibly terrible way to act and think about ourselves. We need to get out of that thinking, and we need to practice good things. and we can do that. The UASI was created as a way to create an openness, a centralized process of openness to understand each other so we can be clear with each other. So good luck in these sort of items that, you know, that we can find ways to really create accessibility. And there's a lot of enjoyment and fun and quality of life. That's the term. And that's quality of life stuff. That's the good stuff. And we should celebrate that and make it really important and meaningful. And that's the idea of sustainability. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to approve the website approval project?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you. Moving on to number eight, NCRIC threat briefing.
I'm obviously a bearer of bad news, but hopefully not that bad today. I'm Mike Senna. I'm the executive director for the Northern California Regional Intelligence Center and the Northern California HIDA. And as far as the threat today, and I've mentioned this in the past meetings, is that we've had a huge decline in foreign terrorist groups planning operations in the United States. But at the same time that that has declined, we've had a huge surge of threats from active shooters, stabbings, people using ramming, fueled by social media, fueled by sometimes mental health issues, and almost always fueled by some perceived grievance. And so what we're doing to address these threats, as well as protect our special events, is trying to coordinate and collaborate. We started this in April, bring together a working group, partners, to deal with mass casualty and emerging threat issues. So we've been in this recruiting phase right now. We're up to 222 chiefs, sheriffs, emergency managers, fire personnel that have been invited and are continuing to join. We're still looking for more if there's folks out there at the table that may be interested. But one of the things that we're trying to do is build out the capacity to, one, the prevention side of it. And that's the suspicious activity, those behaviors, find those indicators and get those reported. Part of this that we're working on is that project mentioned earlier, First Watch, trying to get computer-aided dispatch connectivity, because when threats or suspicious activity are being reported, oftentimes it's going through a dispatcher or a computer-aided dispatch system in the car. There's, you know, text going back and forth, there's textual information. So part of that First Watch project is to create triggers to identify where there are behaviors that are indicative of someone that may be engaged in criminal activity or planning some type of larger criminal event. So we've reached out to a number of agencies, thanks to Dave Rocha, and our calls to many departments to get those cabinet faces starting to build out between our law enforcement partners. So that way we can get those real-time alerts, not just to us in our center, but across the entire region. We shouldn't have to wait for somebody to figure out that an event's going on or something bad is happening and picking up a phone to call another jurisdiction. They should get those alerts in real time or near real time within 2 to 4 minutes. And that way everyone has a baseline of when bad things happen, they can see where they're happening throughout our region. And that way we're able to deploy resources more quickly. On the prevention side, we've been working on behavioral threat assessment and threat management. So it's not, you know, a good idea just to say, we have a threat, we've looked at it, and walk away. These are threats, especially when they're behavioral issues, are things that have to be managed. So part of this team that we're putting together with these 222 executives is to really focus our efforts on designing behavioral threat assessment teams in every county in our region. And that way we have folks that when we have identifying issues for suspicious behavior or reporting tips or leads, that we're able to get someone out there to help with an evaluation, to help see if people need help. Our goal is not to put people in the criminal justice system. It's to balance what we do with privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties, and get people the help they need. That prevention phase can stop the next attack, and that's the piece that we're building out right now. The other component of that is how do we respond when an active threat is occurring? And we see a hodgepodge of that throughout our region. And all has not always been the best. So the goal here is to bring together our federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial partners, and everyone that we've got in our region, to work together on planning and tabletops of how we respond to these types of events and create some training modules that the UASI and the NCRIC can support to get our folks so they can adequately respond to a threat as it's occurring and mitigate that threat as best we can. So we're going to keep building that piece out as well as the recovery piece of it from the investigative side, the evidence response side, and really dealing with the victims of the crime, because they're the ones that oftentimes are forgot as these things are going on. And we need people who are able to tell us the story of what happened. So that's part of what our, you know, mass casualty part of it is. The emerging threat piece is to be able to deal with whatever threats we have in our region effectively using a combination of these task force teams to develop protocols for those threats that are injuring, causing harm to people in the community. So this Monday, we're going to have a steering group meeting for one of those emerging threats group dealing with the fentanyl crisis and the issues that we're having right now. So as I'm talking, we're going to have probably at least two people die in San Francisco. And we're going to have a lot more die throughout our region from groups that are bringing in fentanyl straight from Mexico up to here in multi-pound quantities. Actually, tons are coming across the border. And they can lose a million pills, and it's like nothing happened within their organizations. They have that much quantity of narcotics that they're moving in. When you think that 2 micrograms will kill a person, we have a lot of deadly substance that is flowing throughout our region. So on Monday, we're going to have a steering group that's going to meet. We have already requested task team members for 12 task teams, investigations, patrol, U.S. attorney's office, our folks that work in corrections, public information, dispatch, multidiscipline, and looking at the threat from not just a law enforcement focus, but all of the disciplines that this impacts, and it may have pieces of solutions, and especially our public health partners. So what we'll be doing is inventorying, as part of the mass casualty emerging threats, our resources, the things that we have available. We'll identify our training gaps. We'll identify the technology and resources that can help us identify the threat more quickly and give us all the ability to have a platform that we can see the threats in real time and communicate during crisis and steady state to get the resources in the right place at the right time. Now, speaking of all these things that we're building out, we have a, SEER level events, a special event assessment rating. Our partners in the Department of Homeland Security, mainly led by Secret Service, look at all the events in the country that get submitted for the protection based on levels. The kind of highest level, or not highest, but the scale is 1 to 5. And scale 1 is the Super Bowl. We've done that here in the Bay Area. We've handled events like that. We have a national security, special security event coming up. It's coming up the week of November 13th. The city of San Francisco is hosting it. It's the Asia Pacific Economic Conference. 21 nations will be coming to San Francisco. It is above a SEER 1 event. So Secret Service is the primary organization that's responsible for the coordination, but it is going to take a lot of resources from across the entire region to help support that event. Here, that's my bell. But one of the things that we're going to be doing is using this mass casualty and emerging threats working group protocols to develop our capacity to manage events up to that level or to any level we have in our region. So I want to thank you for your time and I'm open to any questions that you may have.
Thanks, Mike. Any questions?
Yeah, questions. Are we already starting planning for World Cup in the next Super Bowl? Is that?
Those will be part of the process too. So we are probably, and we always are, we're a place where we have always had a great special event. So. As we're working on APEC, my goal is that when we work on these events, just like we have some folks in D.C. that are looking at the SEER rating for events, we should have a group at the local level here in the region that are using this mass casualty emerging threats kind of working group model to look at all of our special events and how to, and figure out how to adequately provide the resources. Because although the federal government says, hey, we're going to bring all the resources for the NSSC or SEER 1 event, we have a lot of events, and as we saw, like the Gilroy Garlic Festival, where we didn't have, in my mind, all the resources that we needed at the time, and then we ended up having to respond to an event with resources from all the regions. So we need to better prepare for that. So that is part of the conversation that, you know, as we look at the Super Bowl in the future, the World Cup coming up, that we need to have that core working group here that's all prepared for any event.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I did want to take an opportunity to thank our partners as well as our regional partners and our state and federal partners for their support in our officer-involved shootings. We had the other week, especially this body, in particular, to thank you for the assets that were procured through this program, as well as through the state Homeland Security Grant Program. Many of the assets that we did receive prior to the incident were mobilized and used to address the threat. So thank you so much for your support, and thank you to my colleagues.
Absolutely, and I just want to add on that. you have an active shooter, a civil process of eviction, a deputy shot, and a person shooting hundreds of rounds. And that's one of the behavioral threat assessment issues that we have, is that we've got to know who we're going to be knocking on the door of and have the resources available to appropriately deal with it. And he also shot down multiple drones, which is incredible, that you have a person with a rifle shooting down the equipment that people are sending in to get a better view and keep officers safe. So that taught us a lot. We learned a lot of lessons from that that we're going to use for this mass gathering. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Comments? Thanks,
Thank
Mike. All the comments?
Hi, Blair Beekman. Thanks a lot for this item. The fentanyl issues since the arrest of a San Jose Police Officers Association executive manager, that was a few months ago now. It's kind of started a chain reaction at the federal and state level to really be working on fentanyl issues. I've seen a more of a real law enforcement approach that I don't know if that's exactly the best strategy at this time. I'm thinking that to take a more institutional approach, which actually was mentioned, I think, in some way, indirectly by Mr. Senna, around ideas of an institutional approach, talking to our police, our public health systems. They actually have their own distribution patterns of these fentanyl drugs that we really have to be investigating and looking into. There's been a real effort to make a recruitment drive of police across the country. I think that's going to have to put on a hold a bit, and we're going to have to really readdress these sort of issues. It's complicated and difficult, but I think it's a better way to address these things. It can really help institutionally at this time to address these things of our institutions, rather than taking it out on local street-level distributors, who I think may be contributing to pressure of violent crime issues that are maybe happening at this time. And when trying to find things to blame, I think it's adding to that pressure that we can relieve if we want to look at more into our institutional use and review that process. Good luck on those efforts. And very much of a thank you that he talked to very nicely, Mr. Senna, about how to the First Watch program and how to address, developing issues. That is such an issue to me that he nicely talked about what are the civil protections, civil rights ideas of a person, a people, as we're trying to understand these sort of things. Of course, good mental health practices and teaching our children well, giving them good structuring and communication so they don't have to take the route of feeling that a mass shooting episode can save the world. I mean, how do we work out of that mind frame? That takes a mental health practice. That good luck in how we do that. And thanks a lot for Mr. Senna's words on how to address a very difficult issue with that I hope we're all trying to consider and work on, and that we can. Good communication, not technology, but good communication and dialogue really helps in that process. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll move on to item number 9, reallocation of grant funds. Look, Tristan.
This 12-month report covers reallocation requests that the management team has already approved. So five of these items pertain to the national priority projects, and one is a carve-out from BATEP. Alameda, San Jose, and San Francisco each received about $217,000 for the K-9 equipment project. Nick Rick's budget on DVE increased by $55,000. Oakland received about $130,000 for the regional CERT conference. And finally, Alameda EMS received $10,000 to conduct its own training. So such a short list, but it's meant to provide more transparency to our approval authority. No secrets there. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. All right, thanks, Tristan. Any questions? Any public comment?
Hi, Blair Beekman. What's just become my usual at this time, a budget item nine or so, is just a reminder, some interesting new developing funding patterns have developed since the Biden administration stepped in and came in. And they've been able to give Bayuasi a little bit of extra dollars each year, a few million extra dollars. I can't quite remember the number. It's a fairly decent amount that is very usable for things like issues like paying NCRIC officers a little extra overtime pay and issues like that. And it was a real issue a few years ago that's been very nicely helping out right now, that situation. I don't know exactly where that funding sits and how it works, and I always try to bring up this time that I think at some point in the future you can develop ways that how that extra funding each year and we now get can somehow be accountable in the public meeting process, and you can have accounting sheets on that. And just a reminder of it's good luck in that work and effort to do that. I know you guys know how to do that well, and I'll be waiting for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any announcements or information for the good of the order?
Yes, I just want to announce that my colleague to my right is retiring. And this is her last meeting for the approval party. And she has worked with us for a number of years, you know, on different types of projects, now with the national priority areas, and working on just a number of different efforts. We're going to miss Janelle tremendously. She's been always ingrained in emergency management in the Bay Area, but we wish her well on her road to retirement. We're happy for her, the entire team is.
I'd like to say it's been an honor and a pleasure to work with Janelle for a lot of years and known you for a long time and really put your heart and soul into your work, and you do a great job, and you're going to be missed. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to thank you all for allowing me to be of service to the Bay Area and entrusting Uwazi and our program team with all of the really important work that you do and that we get to do together. And I sincerely mean that. Thank you.
I do have a question. Has there ever been thought of rotating where this meeting is located? And is it always here? Is there a reason it's always here at Alameda?
We did this in the beginning a long, long time ago. We went to jurisdictions and jurisdictions, and it was decided, I think Dennis, as you probably know, Rich, to keep it here because it's easy to go to from various places. And then folks didn't normally like to get into traffic going to San Francisco as well. But we tried it, and then it was determined by the board to, this is a centrally located area that is easily connected to various jurisdictions.
Okay, just curious, as the city of San Jose will be opening our new EOC expected in October, and certainly would enjoy having folks come and see our new facility and operations. It would be an interesting activity perhaps to have one of our meetings there. So just an offer.
Great, thanks. And maybe, you know, you're planning a conference or a mini conference or a tabletop, that could be a great venue.
Great.
Anything else? And do we have any final general public comment?
Hi, Blair Beekman. Thanks a lot for the meeting today. I guess we're transitioning. It was nice to meet you, and it's good working with you. Thank you all these years. I moved to San Diego. I probably won't be here as often as I used to. But I'll try to be around. I'll try to create help with good connections for both places. And as always at this time, I try to mention that even as we have the name Bayuasi, that I think does really amazing, important, good work. The name Uasi, I think, can have some questionable background beginnings that if you want to change the name, always be thinking of name changes, and that can be okay. And good luck how we can do that, and we can be ready when changes actually do want to take place more. And I had one more item I wanted to talk about here at public comment time, and I just... My brain is in freeze mode when I should be thinking about just the importance of accountability and openness with tech. It's really important, and it's not to be taken lightly. I think something's really possible with its work that is really hopeful, and it's there available to want to be used and to help us create a great future, a much better future than previously expected. And I think it can really help our process along in how we consider our issues, and actually helps in thinking about issues, how to develop our thoughts about issues. Civil rights and civil protections really help in that process, believe it or not. So good luck in including those in your thoughts in this work, and thanks for the meeting.
Thank you, and that concludes the meeting. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
Good job. Good.